Megadeth?
Megadeth.
In the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame yet?
Actually, I don't think they are either. But we're hoping to change that.
That little toe tapper is called...
It's called Washington is Next.
I like that. It's perfect.
Right? I mean, I grant you, it's definitely about Washington, D.C. and wanting to shut down the chaos and horribleness that's there. Speaking of which, there are things produced in Washington, D.C. I heard you guys talking about that earlier.
Oh, really? Angst? Is that one of them?
Surprisingly or not, a very tart cider. I don't know what that says about anything, but it's the truth.
Really?
Yeah. As we were discussing earlier, your taste in true rock and roll, we got to update you. I think that's the thing. I mean, I've always been so impressed by your breadth and depth and length of you know, past musical knowledge.
I've got gaps. I've got gaps in there.
Yeah, like the 90s.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yes. Because I kind of stopped listening for a while.
I mean,
it's
kind of ironical in a way that we're talking about Washington State and the entire musical movement that came out of that.
Yeah.
The rock and roll of that entire decade came out of this very state.
I didn't enjoy that, though, so much.
Yeah.
Grunge kind of... It didn't connect with me. I'm a lover of melody.
I don't even think grunge is a thing. Having now, you know, lived through it and been, have, you know, I remember, you know, wearing out my copy of Nevermind and everything. But like Soundgarden, I think of in the same vein as I think of Led Zeppelin and Jane's Addiction. Mm. They're experimental. I mean, they definitely shoegazed. And that was my only complaint when I saw them live. It's like, guys, we're out here. There's all these people here to see you. Hugely influential, and pray that my wife doesn't hear you talk about Depeche Mode. Not
I'm just saying they didn't have a great deal of chart success,
but they really did. Yeah, I mean, I think this is so maybe from like 1986 to like 1999. Yeah, they're huge. I mean, to this point, Chris and I have seen them three times, I believe, all at Madison Square Garden, and I mean, it's like they sell out every time. They weren't just personal Jesus, but yeah, no, pray she never hears you talk there. They were like, I actually didn't know Depeche Mode that well until I met her, and it was like required learning. But I'm glad I did. Very cool. So anyway, like I said, we're talking about Washington State, much like the grunge movement, kind of came out of nowhere. It is America's second largest wine producing state, second only to California. But in terms of that, it doesn't even produce a tenth of what California produces. So it's like, you know, California's its own. I mean, again, it's its own thing. It has, you know, one of the largest gross national products in the world, sort of thing. So setting aside California, Washington really wasn't a wine entity until maybe around the time I was born in the late 70s. The earliest basic evidence of people making wine there was German Italian immigrants between the 1870s, 1880s. There was some initial efforts, but like Maine, on the other side of the country in the Great White North, they were one of the first states to adopt prohibition, which, as it did in most of the rest of the country, shut down the entire industry. Some people kind of kept going by selling grapes. You could make wine at home that was still allowed. Some wineries or, you know, vineyards got by selling grapes to home enthusiasts, which is important. Pay attention. But aside from that, it didn't really do anything. Where that comes into play, though, however, is once Prohibition was done, in the 1950s, there were, at the University of Washington, winemaking enthusiasts amongst the faculty as well. And they created an association called the Associated Vintners, which eventually, after a couple decades, became the Columbia Winery, which is one of the largest in the state. So it was early efforts there. But again, it was still very, like, it was in a sort of a university collegiate setting, was, you know, trying this, was seeing if grapes could actually even grow up there and what would grow. Why is that a thing? Well, because when we're talking about Washington State, there's two very, very distinctly different parts of Washington State, right? There's the super rainy, Cameron Crowe singles Seattle scene, right?
I love that movie.
I love that movie, too. You love that movie. You just hate all the music that came from it.
I don't hate the music. By the way,
you're just... I kid because I love.
Nine top 10 albums.
Yeah.
The hell do I know?
It's all right. Listen, treat it as there's so much left to learn.
Well, then, isn't that wonderful?
And it's actually tunes you can listen to with your beloved son because there's no expletives coming pretty much anywhere in it. Which is great because, I mean, our kids were listening to it from, you know, kind of day one, and it's poppy and fun, and it's not, like, scary. Yeah. So anyway, there's the rain, and then the rain is basically stopped by a big range of mountains called the Cascades. And beyond that, in eastern Washington, most of the state, mind you, it's desert. The rain basically just doesn't get there. They get, I think, on average, 7 inches of rain a year total.
Hmm.
So not a lot. What does that mean? Well, it means that long summer days, really brutal Arctic winds in winter, but it's also really bad for phylloxera. So there's a lot of vines there that are actually planted on like original rootstock, which is kind of cool. But since it is desert, any production requires irrigation and or wells. So backing up for a second, I told you about the Associated Vintners, which became Columbia. But then there was two other small wineries that got together and merged to become what eventually became known as Chateau Saint-Michel. Chateau Saint-Michel is the big boy in Washington. It owns 2/3 of all the vineyards in the state. It made its bones by hiring, and I'm going to butcher this name because I always butcher it, but a guy named Andre Chichlev, and he was a European immigrant who made his bones in California by going to the Beaulieu vineyards and basically making them. He became known as the Dean of California Cabernet. So when Washington was trying to figure itself out, they hired this guy to come up and help them figure it out. And indeed he did. By the late 80s, Chateau Saint-Michel, I believe it was 1988, Chateau Saint-Michel was named the American Winery of the Year. And it had 5 wines in the Spectator Top 100. So big things came very quickly. But even then, there wasn't much on the scene. What ended up happening is Cabernet, obviously a Bordelaise varietal. One of the other major Bordelaise varietals, as you probably know from listening to The Spot, is Merlot. And in the 1980s, Merlot became the drug of choice from Washington vineyards. And it absolutely blew up. Chateau Saint-Michel especially. Their Merlot just sold cases and cases and cases. Other very famous wineries, L'École 41, which is known for its Merlot. Hoag. These are wineries that came around in the 80s following in the footsteps of Saint-Michel and Columbia. And so Merlot became sort of the big driver, but they kept planting other varietals. And what became absolutely amazing about Washington State is that you can plant an awful lot of things because there's really varied terroir. There's varied little nooks and crannies, right? It's like a Thomas's English muffin. But that wasn't really discovered until recently, right? So it sort of had a renaissance. And what ended up happening was, okay, they planted all these Bordelaise varietals. They did this, they did that. But as I mentioned, Chateau Saint-Michel, owns 2/3 of all the vineyards planted there, right? So what about the other third? Well, the other third are small vineyard owners that weren't necessarily winemakers. And indeed, the wine we have today, which is our wine of the week at Bangor Wine and Cheese, and the wine we're sampling, is the Milbrandt Vineyards Cabernet Sauvignon, which happens to be on the Wine Spectator Top 100 as well, by the way, and is a fantastic deal. It's normally $16.99, and it's 10% off all week. So not bad for a Wine Spec Top 100 wine. They started planting other varietals like Riesling, like Syrah, like Grenache, all sorts of different things. And they started planting in places that other people hadn't been planting, places that were more difficult to farm. And so in Milbrandt's case, they went to, there's a bend in the Columbia River with a very, very steep slope called the Wiluka Slope, and they took what used to be an apple and potato farm and turned it into vineyards and made it huge. So 1997, they planted their first vineyard, and 2002, they decided to start a winery to basically start making their wines, because all of a sudden, all these really, really good winemakers were like, you guys are growing really much better fruit than anybody else. Could you sell us your fruit? And so it is no mistake that Milbrandt Vineyards has, like, you can buy other people's, you know, blah, 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 Milbrandt Vineyards Cab, Milbrandt Vineyards Riesling. In fact, it's too bad. They used to actually make their own little Riesling, but they get such a demand for it. They get such high prices for their, they don't even make an estate Riesling anymore. It's kind of a bummer. At least not one that we get here. So there's a lot of, as I was saying, sort of like the nooks and crannies thing, right? Originally, the sort of, there was a catch-all appellation called the Columbia Valley. The Columbia Valley itself is absolutely enormous. So what they started doing was, again, sort of started carving things up. So there's things like, the probably the most famous one is the Horsehaven Hills, Columbia, under the Columbia crest label, has an H3, right? Horsehaven Hills. So that rises just, again, when you're in the north northern hemisphere, the optimal facing is like southwest, right? So you're getting like the sun and you're getting, you know, ripeness and things like that. So Horsehaven Hills run just north of the Columbia River. So the Columbia River kind of comes out, you know, it spills out in the Puget Sound, whatever, and it comes, it flows out kind of in a big loop over the Cascades and then kind of dives down south and then kind of comes back up again near that Wiluka slope that I was talking about. So there's a lot of these little, as I said, nooks, other things, other places to keep in mind. Oh, by the way, the Wiluka slope is probably the warmest and driest place in the entire place. So they're growing things like Syrah as well as things like this Cabernet that we're enjoying right now. So thicker skin red grapes. Also places to keep in mind, keep your eye out for Rattlesnake Hills, the Red Mountain AVA, where the Antonori family of Tuscany has recently gone into a joint venture with Chateau Saint-Michel. So there's something to keep in mind. And then also the Walla Walla appellation, which is in the easternmost AVA. It also splits into Oregon. And they have very warm summers and chilly winters, and they are growing some really, really intriguing reds right now. So keep your eye out if you're trying to, you know, kind of taste all the different terroirs. Really, really cool stuff. As I said, the wine we're drinking today is the Milbrandt Cab. I invite you to come in. It's our wine of the week. It's absolutely fantastic.
Sure is.
It's, you know, it's a steal. I do want to tell people this week on Thursday, which is the 17th, we will be having our monthly tasting. My friend Jason Sheridan from South Portland Wine Company will be there. We will be trying some really, really excellent wines from the Finger Lakes regions, as well as other things, but a new Riesling and Cabernet Franc from a new winery to Maine, which I think are just, man, they're really excellent. So come check those out, and that'll be from 5 to 7. Of course, it is free, 21 plus, please. And then I do want to remind everybody, on November 9th, we will be having our 10th anniversary of buying the store. We will be having our bubbly tasting in the store from 1 to 3. It's a Saturday, so that's why it's from 1 to 3. And we invite you to come on in for that. We'd love to see you and raise a glass and celebrate. Next week, we'll be talking about kind of going back over all of America. We are probably going to be trying a intriguing new product to the store, which is a rhubarb wine made in southern Maine. So I think I need an excuse to try that. So we're going to try that and talk about other things going on in the rest of the United States before we move on to South America. So thank you for joining me, and I'll see you next week. Cheers.
I look forward to that. Thank you, Eric. Eric Mann, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, Message in the Bottle, every Tuesday here on Downtown.